So, positive illusion, creative self-deception. Is it a bad thing, or maybe it's a necessary thing for achieving your material goals? Let's consider from the viewpoint of classical psychology. There was a time when those who were trying to understand the human mind thought that the more you address reality, whatever that is, the more you are perceiving what is, the more balanced and appropriate your life will be. In other words, success in life depends on your seeing clearly what's going on. So that used to be a universally accepted way to live, and the universally accepted standard for successful behavior. Maybe some of you thought like that, or you still think like that. The more you can understand clearly about yourself and the world. I mean, we're not speaking spiritually at this point. I'm speaking from the material point of view. The more you see yourself materially, clearly, the more you see the future, what could happen for you clearly, the more psychologically in tune you are. So that used to be the theory. But now things have changed, and it's thought, not universally, but to a great degree, that everyone needs a bit of illusion in order to make their way through life. So I wondered what you think about that. In other words, a certain quota of illusion is due everyone, so that you can power your way through life. There are three basic areas where illusion is considered good in appropriate amounts. Of course, who's to judge what's the appropriate amount of illusion? Is it like when you're cooking, you add 1 teaspoon of this and 1/4 teaspoon of that? But think about it for yourself before we get to those three areas, basic areas of so-called positive illusion. I wonder, how much do you really think? You want to know what's what? If I ask you that, honestly, what would you say? Yeah, I have to know exactly the way things are. Or, not so necessary. The main thing is to have some good moments, have some good feelings. Whether you know or you don't know, the main thing is to try to fulfill whatever you are, whomever you are. What do you think? Any takers? Yes?
Last Sunday, I asked you the question of how important it is not to feel aversion against towards the material world in the spiritual life, you know. And I loved your answer there. I guess that applies as well to Maya, this illusion that we live in. I guess, should we feel aversion towards Maya, or?
What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think, like you said.
Are you like a truth warrior, and I've got to find out exactly what's going on? Well, maybe on some days, but other days just let it come. It may be illusion, it may be the truth, but whatever, as long as it feels good to the senses, and you know.
Well, no, your response was that this material world is another energy of Krishna, and that we can use for the service.
Well, that response was for a different audience. But we're going in a different direction tonight. So, yes?
Yes, it's funny that this is my first time here in quite some time. And,
mine too.
It's been well convoked.
Thank you.
And that is actually, as you were speaking, the way I do feel inside myself, the way I want to know. Mm-hmm. For some reason, it does seem to give me power within my own being to try and understand what I understand.
So you have this drive in you.
I do. And the one thing I really have a negative drawing driven force about is hypocrisy. Which is one of the reasons I do like having that knowledge for myself. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I try and balance it with the saying for myself, which is, I love it when I'm wrong. Because when I'm wrong, I have to go back to the old analog system versus our new digital system where you get right to a point and have to fine-tune. So I do like it when I'm wrong so that I can go back, look at what I thought, how I came to that conclusion, etc.
Anyone else? Are you possessed with the burning desire to know?
Oh, I'm losing my voice. Hear me if I stop.
It's all right. Fine.
Just thinking that we can only ever know truth from our own perspective.
You're sure about that? That's true, right?
Well,
from your perspective. You just lock yourself in a box, you realize that.
Yeah.
We can only know truth from one's own perspective. Oh, thank you for your perspective.
I rather like my perspective. So I'm comfortable with the truth. I know. I stand in that box.
So in your life, are you like trying to understand what's for real?
To the extent to which I need to. I've come across something that's like, I don't know what's going on here. I need to operate with this. Try to figure out.
So let's say you don't know what's going on, but if it feels good, you'll let it be?
Unless I think it's going to bite me.
In the future.
Yeah.
But if it feels good now, and maybe it might bite you in the future, that's all right.
Yeah, I'm willing to test it.
Okay. that's normally the way it is, you know? We have a high tolerance for things that provide immediate gratification, even though they may bite us in the future. It's amazing how high our tolerance level is for immediate fulfillment, and the immediate bang. And perhaps you've been in situations in which you've told yourself, well, I don't know how this is going to turn out in the future, but right now it seems good. Yeah, everyone's shaking their head like, yeah. Even when you have certain strong standards for your own personal behavior, your own personal code. Sometimes you take leave of your own standard because, well, you know, it feels right now, and I don't know about the future, but it could be right in the future too. But meanwhile, you got to do something. Yes? Anyone else? Yes?
In my perspective, I've been listening to some of your lectures. And I totally agree with the point that most of us live in the so-called the mass consensual trance, the term that you coined. And the way there is illusion everywhere, but I feel that there is a little bit of trace of reality in that illusion, and that's something you're trying to find.
So you're sifting throughout the day. Somewhere amidst all this illusion, there's something real. I've got to sift. I've got to find it. That characterizes your day and night.
Sometimes.
Right? Huh? So, this is an important point. How much do we really want to be for real? I don't know, maybe in your relationships, have you ever looked someone in the eye and said, I'm for real? Raise your hand. How many of you have done that? There's a higher percentage than when I asked this question in Las Vegas. That's the last time I asked this question, was last week in Las Vegas. Very few persons raised their hands. So, yes, And I, probably when you said it, you meant it, right? For the moment, right? I'm for real right now. I can't say what the next weekend's going to be like. But right now, I'm for real. And this seems so right. I've noticed that human beings are kind of, they really fall victim for something that feels good for the present moment. And from what I've observed, my travels around the world, there's a lot of acceptance of this standard. Look, what more do you expect out of life? If it feels good right now, and it looks like it's going to feel good tomorrow, hey, just back off and just enjoy the moment. How many of you would find that acceptable? Please raise your hand. Maybe, maybe. Thanks for your honesty. You raise your hand too?
Sometimes.
In other words, you want to be flexible. Is that a flexible approach to life? You know, you don't want to be serious all the time, right?
No.
You got to leave room for the unpredictable and the surprises, and you don't want to be locked in a box. You don't want to be stiff. Yes.
Yeah, I struggle sometimes with selective standards.
Yes.
Selective standards.
So what would throw you off the mark, so to speak? And you would kind of take leave of your carefully developed standards.
Probably. Well, I guess if I feel like I'm doing, like when I was a child, I was raised in the Southern Baptist Christian tradition, mm-hmm. So I was constantly, I was forced to go. Mm-hmm. So if anyone ever is, trying to be enthusiastic and encourage me, if I feel like I'm getting too much at once of a good thing, then I'm kind of like, okay, let's back up a little bit.
So that's
take a breather, but not don't give it up. Just take a breather. Yeah.
So that happens in all areas of your expression, like with a quest for knowledge or. Relationships. Relationships too.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a bit too good for me. I better step back.
Just to assess it from a distance, and then when it's safe, when you feel safe, go back in there.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Now, a lot of people function in that way because they've been hurt by a lot of persons who said they were for real. I want to ask you to raise your hand on that one. So, there are three prime areas that psychologists say we have illusions about. So the debate used to be whether those three prime areas of illusion are good or bad. Used to be held that it's bad. Anything that's inflated, exaggerated, you got to get rid of in order to be a psychologically stable person. Now the thinking is going the other way. Let's discuss those three areas. First of all, your own self-appraisal about your abilities, your strengths. Psychological tests have shown that most people rate themselves much higher than their own associates rate them. And most people think that their associates, their peers, are actually just a bit not as good as them. That's why they're your friends. In some way, you know you're better. So that's one area, the self-appraisal. The technical term, in case you want to know what it's called, self-enhancement. Human beings are supposed to have that tendency to always enhance their value and their abilities, enhance their impact, their vision of the impact they're making on the world. So then the next area, so please keep the first one in mind, your self-appraisal, how you see yourself, how you rate yourself. The next area is in terms of how much control you actually have. Human beings are known to have a tendency to think that things in their life and in the world around them are more in their control than actually they are. And then area number three, these key areas of illusion we're discussing. Area number three is future outcomes. Human beings have an optimistic bias, which doesn't bear out as the future unfolds, but still they have this inbuilt bias that in the future I'm going to feel good, in the future things are going to work out, in the future things are going to be all right. So as I said, it used to be thought that these three key areas of illusion were negative. Now there's a lot of thinking that this could be positive, because by succumbing to these illusions, by buying into them, you are able to work very hard for material goals. And if that's what it's all about, then whatever gets you going in the struggle, in the race, whatever prods you forward, pushes you forward, whether it's reality or illusion, it doesn't matter. The whole point with your life is to go forward in material gratification, achievement, and success. So what's so valuable about the truth if it slows down your quest for material gratification? In other words, it very well seems to be that a healthy dose of false ego gets things done. A healthy dose of self-enhancement. I can do it. I'm actually pretty good. I meant to achieve a lot of things. And also a healthy dose of imagining how much is in your control, exaggerating that, as well as being optimistic about the future. Oh, I can just see it now, how I'm going to feel a few years from now, when I finish school, or when I get a job promotion, a few years from now, or when I meet Mr. or Ms. Wright, I just can see right now how I'm going to feel in the future. This optimistic bias, which even social scientists with a material bent, they admit it doesn't work out that way. You're always overshooting the mark in terms of the emotional bang you're going to get from future acquisitions. You can't accurately predict. In technical terms, this is called the impact bias. You cannot properly predict the future bang that an achievement is going to give you. Or some, whether it's a relationship or a promotion or a raise or a holiday trip, you always overshoot the mark in terms of how you're going to feel. You have the tendency to exaggerate. Let's talk about, we'll talk more about exaggerated sense of control. Because when your life feels out of control, you get really down. I don't know if any of you have ever felt that. Oh, I'm just powerless. I mean, I don't mean like politically powerless, but just in terms of your personal ability to cope, your personal ability to get what you think you need. When you feel powerless, what happens? You just don't want to live anymore.
Just
anger.
Give up.
Huh?
Anger.
Anger? What else? She said just give up. Sadness. Like all your avenues are blocked, huh? Yeah. Sometimes you may feel, at some points in your life, that you don't have a good reason to lift your head off the pillow in the morning. And if it gets worse and worse and just stays and stays and stays, you could be diagnosed as, you know, being depressed. Some of you may know that the fastest growing disease in the world is mental depression. And it's going on, not in the developing countries, it's going on in the first world. So, one interesting point you might want to meditate on is that actually psychologists agree that those who are to a certain degree clinically depressed actually have a realistic perception of themselves. But bear in mind that having an accurate perception of yourself is not considered, is not universally considered to be beneficial. So when that statement is made that actually only those who are to some degree clinically depressed have accurate perceptions about number one, their self abilities, number two, their power of control, the scope of control, and number three, future outcomes. It's with the understanding that being realistic is not always the best path forward in life. Because let's say you want to achieve things. You want to get things. You want to acquire things. The way society works is that you need a healthy dose of some false ego. You need a healthy dose of unjustified optimism. Now, those of you who are aware of Bhagavad Gita, the prime yoga text, you know that Krishna explains how it's the false ego that drives material life onward. You've got to believe in material happiness and how it's going to satisfy you. Otherwise, you can't push on with life. So, you buy into that myth in terms of your individual life, and also socially, you buy into it as a collective. Someone was mentioning something I call mass consensual trance. That means collectively, as a society, everyone buys into the belief that material happiness will satisfy. And you're optimistic about the future. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get that thing known as material happiness. When you read Bhagavad Gita, you may be a little shocked that why is material happiness being criticized? Well, I mean, what's wrong with wanting to be materially happy? But you have to understand the viewpoint of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is coming from. When you compare material happiness to non-material happiness, it's then that you see material happiness is devalued. But if all we know is material happiness, naturally we're just going to go for that and get really wrapped up in that because we don't know anything else. So therefore, in order to get material happiness, you've got to believe it's there and it's going to give me fulfillment. It's going to be nice. Or you can be cynical and skeptical. Material happiness isn't all that everyone makes it out to be, but there's nothing else to do. Anyone here been through that one? Yeah. Hey, look, I didn't make the world this way. I know material happiness is an illusion, but I guess that's all there is, so you might as well go for it. That was me during my university days. I was a cynical New Yorker, and I just figured material pleasure is so fleeting, it has a beginning and end, it comes and goes so quickly, but hey, it seems that's all there is, so what can you do? You might as well go with it. So the whole point of Krishna's lessons in pleasure acquisition that he gives in Bhagavad Gita is to make us aware of a higher standard of pleasure. Otherwise, certainly you would agree with the analysis that if having a bit of illusion propels you forward in your material goals, why not? And if being for real and having accurate perceptions about your life slows down your material progress, then why not get rid of reality? What do you think? What would you say? Yeah.
Well, get rid of reality?
Yeah, because it's getting in the way of what you want and need. Are you willing?
Pretend.
Are you willing to face the music every day?
I'd rather face the music every day than get rid of reality.
Really? So, okay. So, you regularly, daily, have a standard that everything's got to be for real.
No, daily I have a desire to choose that over the illusion.
Okay, that's a very nice distinction you made. So what happens? You have a desire, but what happens?
There's a struggle there.
Why the struggle? Tell us.
I don't know. I can only speak from my personal experience. But
well, what is that experience?
When it comes down to it, it boils down to, well, I got to have a roof over my head. That's what it comes down to, because
resignation.
Yeah.
I didn't make the world this way. What do you want out of me? I'm just trying to cope, trying to do good like everyone else, you know, and who knows what good is anyway, but you got to make it through the day and night.
That's what gets me every time.
And you look for someone to help you get through the day and night, and hey, what else is there to life? Do you ever wonder that there could be a higher standard?
Oh. That's the thing.
You know there is, but...
Yeah, but you can choose the other one, too. So that's the thing.
You can choose the lower.
It's knowing better, but choosing.
So what do you think it would take for you to choose the higher instead of the lower? What do you think it would take?
It's a choice. It's the willingness.
A quick announcement.
Yeah?
Does anybody here have a white BMW parked on the street? It's about to get towed because it's in someone's driveway.
Reality check. The towing company doesn't respect BMWs. In fact, they'll probably charge you more for towing it. All right, so... Let's get back to, so you were saying you're aware that there could be a higher standard, but you're choosing sometimes the lower standard. Why? Why?
I don't know. I think it must be safety. A safety feels safer, you know?
So would you say illusion feels safer? Because everyone is kind of huddled on a lower level, so...
Yeah. What do you do when you don't have a home? You know what happens to people that are homeless, you know, living on the edges of society because it's not seen as acceptable.
So are you saying that in order just to get the basis of life, you have to buy into an illusion?
I think we do.
Yes.
It sounds more like it's accepting a reality. Necessarily have to choose higher. You can have both.
You can have both. Mm-hmm. You go back and forth between the two. Mm-hmm. According to how you feel that day. And the social pressures.
You don't have to choose. You can be both at the same time.
You can be high and low at the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Don't balance.
Now just tell me this. If you want to have both the high and the low at the same time, what about if the high is so attractive that it makes the lower pointless, not worthwhile? So this is the deal that Krishna is offering in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is offering a process to get the highest pleasure, which will naturally make you relinquish the lower temporary pleasures. So that kind of deal is interesting. It's based on self-interest, where pleasure-driven entities. And the only way, this point's explained by Krishna in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, the only way, realistically, that we're going to let go of the lower things, the illusions, the insubstantial pleasures, is if we get a superior taste of the higher pleasure. Self-interest. It's a very interesting point. For those of you who plan to take a look at Bhagavad Gita, you'll find that Krishna explains how you may even try to just clamp down on yourself in terms of, I will not engage in illusion. I will discipline myself. I'll even bite my fingernails, but I will not. No, no, I will not. No, no, no. Yes, I mean no. Maybe some of you have gone through those kind of withdrawal periods where you just, I've had it. I'm not going to indulge in whatever anymore. I'm not going to love anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to overeat anymore. I'm not going to drink anymore. Not... list goes on and on. And then after a while, you just lose control of your mind and senses and you're back where you started. So what Krishna explains is that you may try to clamp down on yourself and say, you're not going to indulge in illusion. You're not going to compromise. But unless you have a higher taste, a superior experience, we're not going to let go of the lower experiences. This is practical. This is how practical bhakti yoga is. Connect to the highest reality, you'll let go of the lower reality. Now let's consider how much control we actually have over things. To think that you have an exaggerated sense of control is considered positive to some experts, because then you feel motivated to go out and get in the material world. Because you can do, you can influence, you can make it happen. You ever had that feeling before? I can make it happen. I have an impact. Yeah? Yeah?
Of course it does.
Yeah. Can you give us an example?
An example? Well, okay, I'm an artist.
Uh-huh.
I paint, and for me, when I body paint...
What, body paint? Can you explain what that is?
You get naked and I paint your body.
Oh.
So, and you have to find the model or the models, then you have to find a photographer, and then you have to think about those, what you have to get, and then you put the whole shoot together and you think, right, I can do it and I can make it, and then you're painting for 10 hours, but you're like, no, I can...
Painting someone's body? They have to stand there for 10 hours?
Sit, lay, awkward positions, yes, 10 hours.
Who agrees for this?
Everything for the art, right?
Do they pay you or you pay them?
No, neither. They don't pay me, I don't pay them. They get a print once the shoot is done, and they are happy, and I'm happy, and everybody is happy. You're like,
no,
that's possible,
that's
true.
So, I'm open, but I'm just trying to understand where where's the thrill come from? You're not getting paid, and
well, it's I like to create something, and maybe that's when you ask, you know, like I can make it and put it together. So I'm like, okay, I have that vision, I can create that piece of art, which is at the end like a picture, right?
And so this is permanent. Like a tattoo, permanent on them?
Permanent, right? It's still material and I can see it, right? But it's how permanent.
How long does the artwork on the body last?
The paint, or yeah. they wash it up. So whatever is permanent is the photo.
Oh, the photo.
The
I see. And they really get a buzz from that?
Yeah.
Okay. So... as an artist, you feel that you're making an impact in this way.
Yes.
Making the world a better place?
Yes.
I don't know, I'm just asking. No value judgments.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else? You making an impact. You're making waves. You can make it happen. You can make a difference.
All of us.
No, just you. Yes.
I own a restaurant. The reason I own it is to help people to eat better, to learn more about eating, and to be better, and have a positive impact by spread. Very small, but we're growing.
Now, someone might argue that in terms of positive illusion, it would be much more motivating for you to think, I can make a huge wave. And that way you'll work harder.
Well,
I mean,
waves start out small and then they
grab you. Yeah, exactly. Yes. You start out with a Ford and then you get a BMW, right? Right, okay. So, the example that the prime example psychologists give about an exaggerated sense of control, particularly in terms of things that aren't in our control in any kind of way, things that people recognize happen by chance, like games of chance. I don't know anyone ever played with dice here. You ever seen persons, when they want to roll a high number, they shake the dice really vigorously? Anyone ever done that? Yes, you know. Yeah. And then what happens when you want to roll a low number? You roll very gently. You've done that, yeah? As if that's going to make a difference on the numbers. So this is a prime example of an exaggerated sense of control. Sometimes you see, and then what happens when you get on a winning streak with rolling the dice? You ever see someone, you know, when the things are really going good, and they're rolling one appropriate number after another with the dice, they do, to personalize the whole situation. These dice are now customized by me, they're personalized, I breathed on them, so they're sure to do my bidding. So this is a prime example of exaggerated sense of control. But unless you feel that in your life you can make some waves, you may feel quite discouraged. And then what about your futuristic outcomes? Shouldn't you be optimistic about that? Mm-hmm. Now, what exactly do you expect in the future?
Graduate from college.
Graduate from college. But that's not all you're really expecting.
No.
It's not the graduation in and of itself that's going to do it for you, right? What is it?
Oh, I mean, I have to do all the work.
You have to do all the work, and then?
And then I get to be a physicist.
Okay. You get to be a physicist. Mm-hmm. Now, but what you're really focusing on is the emotional impact and bang that you're going to get from something, either the graduation ceremony or being employed as a physicist or getting a big grant as a scientist.
I just like the idea of being able to be in a place where I'm constantly learning about something I have no idea about. So I really just want to get to my degree so I can constantly be learning and not have to deal with all the other stuff.
What other stuff?
Like, having to be in English classes and
okay.
I mean, I like English, but it's not what I want to do with my life. I'd rather be submersive.
Okay, so you're seeking fulfillment through this constant studies of things you don't know.
On a materialistic level, yes. I mean, I am, but...
So you can just see yourself alone in front of your computer, alone in the library, alone in the research lab.
Yes.
All your life.
First periods of time, yeah.
Well, that means there are times when you're going to want a research partner.
Yeah.
Aha! So there are other expectations for, there are other objects of your optimism, yes?
I suppose, yes.
Ah, okay. Anyone else? Things that you're pretty sure are going to happen to you. Feelings that you're sure you're going to get. Yes?
Yes. Can we say something?
Sure. Feelings you're kind of sure you're going to get in the future.
Your question is, what do I expect in the future?
Yeah, feelings that you're sure, that you're pretty sure you're going to be able to get in the future. By some achievement, some acquisition.
You know, promotions and, you know, being able to purchase a home.
So you're pretty sure it's going to happen, and you're quite optimistic about the emotional impact that's going to generate for you. Now, might you have any reason to suspect that you could be overshooting the mark in terms of your expectations?
Yes.
Okay. Now, depending on your viewpoint, if you're looking at things from the viewpoint of Bhagavad Gita, these material expectations entrap you and deceive you. Mm-hmm. If you look at things from a more materialistic viewpoint, you should think that you're going to get it all, and that will push you forward for more material achievement. What do you think?
No, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, no, because the material things aren't going to still make you happy. So on a spiritual level, you want to be somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I do, personally. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, because the material things at the end of the day, if you...
Just at the end of the day. Maybe noontime, there's, you know.
At any time of the day.
Any time of the day, ooh.
Life can happen at any point, so that doesn't matter, really. The material things, we should try to concentrate on a more spiritual level opposed to material things, but somehow we're caught up in the material things.
Ah, I see. So what to do? You have a suspicion that the emotional bangs that you are expecting in the future, it may not be that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what to do? Okay, all right. Another point. It's recognized, as we said, that some degree of illusion is necessary for you to push on with the material goals that society implants you. But there's an idea that too much ego enhancement is over the top.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that society will help you to have the right amount of ego. Because if your social relations, this is of course the notion, if your social relations see that you're too much into yourself and have too much inflated conception of yourself, they'll help rein you in by the power of social conformity. One interesting psychological test that's been done. It's found that, you know, persons who are very upbeat about themselves, the life of the party, very super positive, and have a very enhanced image of themselves, people like those kind of persons at first. But by the seventh meeting with such a person, they start to irritate you. I don't know, maybe you've had that experience. You know, those kind of persons you envy. Wow, that person's got the gift of the gab, the life of the party, knows exactly the right thing to say, can just flow with any situation, and is always upbeat about their life and their expectations. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get that promotion. I'm going overseas. I'm getting the house. On and on it goes. And you find yourself wondering, wow, what about me? Why can't I be like that? Yes, it's happened. At first, they impress you. But then, research has shown that after about the seventh encounter with such a person, you start getting irritated. You just calm down and just, you know, let some air out of the balloon, please. So let's discuss this point. How, since I think many of you here will agree some degree of illusion is necessary, how do you know when it's too much illusion? How do you judge?
Well, probably it's too much when you cannot fulfill any of your illusions and then you end up in depression.
Mm. So that means you've gone too far with your illusions.
Yeah.
So what's the right amount of illusion?
Well, I don't know what the right amount is, but I would say you have to have a positive thinking towards the future somehow, because otherwise...
So you got body painting is going to explode in the future.
I'm not going to think like that, but you know, I don't know. I like it for business, so you have to look forward to something.
Yeah, exactly. This
so
is the point.
That's the illusion, maybe.
You have to look forward to something. She said it. Did you hear that? Mm-hmm. Okay, yes.
Well, you keep using the word illusion, and I'm curious where you find the difference between the word illusion and you would find inspiration or goal, so that you're not trying to pull the wool over your own eyes, but that you are trying to move forward.
Okay, very good question. And exactly where I wanted to head in this portion of our discussion. If we look at things from the viewpoint of spiritual knowledge given in Bhagavad Gita, we find that illusion is clearly defined in the very beginning. Anyone who thinks the body and mind is the self is an illusion. That's Krishna's standard for being able to decide what is illusion and who is an illusion. Anyone who thinks that their self is completely material is an illusion. They think that the body and mind are the self, and therefore it will follow that so much of your life's energies are pursuing success and gratification for the body and mind. Because once you have that foundational mistake, all your activities are going to be based on that mistake. This is a lesson in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. The body is always changing, the mind is always changing, but there is a core, non-material unit of consciousness known in Sanskrit as the Atma, the spirit self, which doesn't change, although the body and mind are always changing. So here you have a clear standard for what is illusion. If I think I'm the body and mind, so much of my life's energies will be going towards pleasing the body and mind. Just like this lady here thinks, I am my green shirt. And what would happen if you spent so much of your waking days just taking care of your green shirt? It's me.
Yeah,
people would think you're actually crazy. So, this is Krishna's standard in Bhagavad Gita, that if we think we are matter, then we're an illusion. Because we're going to spend our whole life trying to gratify ourselves materially. But if we're not material, how's that going to help you? Only in illusion can you imagine it's going to help you. And there'll be some imaginary gratification. Maybe you can remember times in your life when you just really convinced yourself, oh, this is really good. I mean, really. In fact, you may remember, sometimes people say, in their own words, they say, this is too good to be true. Because they actually know that it can't last. There's got to be something going wrong somewhere. If there's no such thing as a superior standard of pleasure, then we could accuse Bhagavad Gita of being negativistic. But if there is a higher standard of pleasure, then maybe we are the ones who are self-negating. Maybe we are the ones who are being negative by denying ourselves the possibility of going to a higher level. Often when I'm discussing, let's say, there's a lot of couples in the room. And so I just present to them, do you ever think it could be possible that you might be impeding the other person's development? Who, me? We love each other. How could I be impeding his or her development? Please. Well, I say, first of all, what do you know what the identity of your beloved, your TSO, your temporary significant other? Do you know the identity? Everything these days is alphabet. TSOs, FWB, friends with benefits, whatever. How can you actually be for real with someone if you don't know what your real identity is? So the prime yoga text, Bhagavad Gita, first lays the foundation of understanding what your genuine identity is. And then you can proceed with laying out a course of action. Because if you're not the body and mind, what's the point in thinking that you're going to fulfill yourself by bodily and mental endeavors? So this is the illusion measuring standard given by Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. This is the first step. It's not the 10th step, but it's the first step, and you have to begin somewhere. So just, you can ask yourself this question as you begin your day, as you end your day. Am I this body and mind, or am I something different from the body and mind? Am I actually a spiritual entity that's wearing this body and mind, just like someone's wearing a green shirt? Think about that. So the yoga system actually begins from this point and then reaches its culmination in understanding the relationship between you as a spiritual entity and the supreme spiritual entity. That's the culmination of the bhakti yoga system. The foundation is material happiness won't make you happy. That doesn't mean there's no happiness. There's a higher standard. Why not go for that higher standard instead of indoctrinating yourself with positive illusions? Buying into the illusion to some degree, as you see it, just for the sake of getting some drive and endeavor in the material world. I've got to believe in myself. I've got to believe it's out there. You might think, well, there's no alternative to that. What do you want me to do? Just, you know, sleep all day? I've got to believe it's out there. There's nothing else to do. And, of course, society is urging you onward. Yes, it's out there. Go for it. Go for it. Could there be another lifestyle? Could there be a way how you can be spiritual even while living in the material world? Because obviously, none of you are about to just drop it all and go live in a cave. So could there be a way in which you could, amidst material affairs, and while doing the necessary to maintain your body, could there be a way how to generate a spiritual reality? So these are the questions that Bhagavad Gita deals with. So one thing I'd like to leave with you tonight is some kind of self-appraisal. How much have I bought into self-enhancement in terms of thinking on the body and mind? What do I know about my non-material identity? And how much have I exaggerated my sense of control? I know you all know persons who you consider their control freaks. And you would never call yourself that. Everyone feels that, look, I need a certain amount of control and I can use a bit more, but I'm not a control freak. That's someone else. So you imagine that there's going, if you don't have it now, there's going to be in the future a greater scope for control for you. And then key area of illusion number three is future outcomes. It's going to be good. It's going to feel good. It's going to fulfill me. Suppose all that is suspect. And suppose you don't have to be just negative in considering all that to be suspect. Maybe there is a higher reality, a superior pleasure. So all these points you'll find discussed more deeply in Bhagavad Gita. But tonight we just wanted to stir you up a bit. So, next time I come, we can go deeper into this subject matter. How illusion is actually not necessary. It actually gets in your way. And reality means the highest pleasure. We're a little afraid of reality because we think it'll ruin all the fun. To be completely for real, to deal with 100% reality, how are you going to enjoy that? You have to pull the wool over your eyes to some degree. But maybe not. So dare to consider that by understanding exactly what is your identity, why you're in this world, what is the ultimate goal of life, you'll have a superior lifestyle. This is what the Bhakti Yoga system is offering. How to connect with the ultimate reality in such a way that you can use even your temporary material body, your temporary material mind, for achieving something that doesn't change, although the body and mind are always changing. Then your desires for relationships, pleasure, happiness can actually be for real. But as long as we're on the platform of the material, everything's going to be shaky. Everything is going to be bewildering, deceptive. So there is another level. That's what Krishna is introducing us to in Bhagavad Gita. So, you've been a very good audience.